Creative Conversations. I'm Roger Humphrey. In this episode, I'm pleased to welcome Randy Ojeda. Randy is an entertainment lawyer and is also the owner of a boutique artist management agency in Tampa, Florida. Please join us for an informative and interesting discussion of the business side of being an artist. But before we begin, please hit the like and subscribe buttons. It's really easy to do, and it helps me out a lot. Thanks. And we are welcoming to the program Randy Ojeda. Ojeda,
yeah, that's correct. Perfect job, Roger.
That'll be the first thing I got right today, probably.
Hey, you got your clothes on successfully, so I'd say that's a great start.
At my age, that's a big deal.
Right on.
That's funny. So you are an entertainment attorney, is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
Okay. And so kind of walk me through that. Let's start with the idea. You work with musicians, I'm assuming?
Yeah. So, I'm an entertainment attorney, but I'm mostly a music attorney. So I work with musicians, artists. I represent a few record labels and management companies as well. And I represent their interests when it comes to, you know, recording contracts, publishing contracts, collaboration agreements, sync licensing, you know, kind of anything that involves anything creative that involves contracts is up my alley. So I do a lot of interesting work compared to a lot of lawyers, but it definitely keeps me on my toes.
I bet it does.
Yeah.
I bet it does. How did you get interested in that kind of a practice?
Yeah, I kind of went a roundabout way into this practice. So I was a musician myself, of course, to begin. So I'm a bass player. I played bass in a number of bands when I was growing up and in high school and into college. And then, thought I was going to kind of leave that world behind when I went to law school. But while I was in law school, I went to Loyola in Chicago.
Okay.
So I was in Chicago, and I met a number of artists, a couple rappers and producers and people who, kind of needed help with the business side of things. And, you know, that was, you know, kind of my skill set. So I started artist management while I was in law school, and I started managing artists, and then finished law school. And instead of taking the bar like most lawyers do, I was really into the management practice. So I just kept managing artists and kept working with them in that capacity. And I did that for, almost 5 years, 5 or 6 years.
Okay.
And and built up this management company. I had, at its peak, I had over 10 artists that I was working with as their manager.
This is based out of Chicago at that time?
This was out of Chicago at the time, yeah. But I was working with clients from all over. So clients in New York, clients in LA, clients in Chicago, clients here in Florida, where I'm based now. And so I did that, and, you know, I didn't think I would look back to the law. But then the pandemic happened, you know? So suddenly my artists who were playing, you know, 200 dates out of the year were sitting at home, and consequently I was also sitting at home. So, you know, I thought if I was ever going to retool, that would be the time to do it. And, you know, you remember the pandemic days, it was like, you know, we didn't know if live music was even going to come back.
Like, right.
It was kind of a scary time. So I said, well, you know, I have a pretty good backup plan, which is being a lawyer. So, studied for the Florida bar, which is where I was based at the time and based now, took the bar, passed it, and started a entertainment law practice basically the next day. And since then I haven't looked back.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Now, working primarily with popular music, I'm assuming, from the way you're talking about this.
Yeah, yeah. So I do a lot of hip hop, a lot of pop music, a lot of rock and indie rock stuff. Haven't really dived too much into like classical music because I guess there's not as much need for lawyers in that capacity. But
it's a different critter. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is. But I'm open to all genres of music. I mean, personally, I'm a big fan of all genres, and anybody that needs help, I'm happy to help them.
Well, I think, you know, a contract is a contract, right? I mean,
Exactly.
It doesn't really matter what kind of music I'm providing as a musician. You know, if I'm working with a publishing company, I still have to deal with publishing rights and licensing rights. And if I'm a composer of music, then I still, it's a lot of the same, you know,
yeah,
a lot of the same issues.
Absolutely. So, yeah. It definitely helps, though, when I'm a fan of the music. It makes it more fun for me, of course. But yeah, I mean, all music follows very, very similar legal precedents and legal pathways. So, yeah.
But if it's music you like, it's easier to be passionate about your client.
It is. It is. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Hire my guy.
Exactly.
So, exactly. Yeah. So now you're in Tampa area?
I'm in Tampa, Florida. Yeah. Born and raised. Left, you know, for law school, obviously, and moved back.
So that was the connection.
Yes, yeah. Born and raised here in Tampa, and didn't really enjoy the winters in Chicago. So I'm back where it's sunny, but there's hurricanes now. So, you know,
you guys got slammed with a big one here recently.
Hurricane Milton? A couple of them. Yeah, Milton and Helene. Now there's, you know, at the time of this recording, there's Hurricane Sarah off in the Caribbean that we're looking out for next week. So it's the hurricane season that never ends.
Boy, I guess. Yeah. How bad were you hurt? Your business?
I mean, it wasn't too bad for me, you know, personally. We had some damage to the home and stuff, but luckily we made it out all right. But a lot of my clients were heavily affected, especially clients who live in like the St. Pete Clearwater area,
uh-huh.
Who got hit really bad with storm surge, because you know they're right on the coast, so.
Right.
Definitely had some cancellations and people who, hey, you know, I can't pay you till next month, or, you know, situations like that. But, you know, we're a good community here in the area and trying to work together to build back up stronger. And, you know, hopefully the venues and restaurants that were affected will build back up, and, you know, our scene will continue to thrive.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so. So, you're working with, like you said, hip hop. I had a guest on from Miami, actually, by way of Venezuela. He left Venezuela for all the good reasons, and
wow,
is living.
Yeah.
But he writes EDM. His name is
okay.
Ignacio Rangel, and he does a lot of gaming music.
Oh wow!
Does a lot of video game. Well, I say a lot. I don't know what a lot is, but I know he does video game music. So are your clients involved in that as well?
Yeah, I have some clients that do you know, sync and soundtracking for games and movies, as well as, you know, clients who I just met with a client yesterday who is big in like the ambient music space.
Uh-huh.
So he makes music for, you know, like those playlists that you see online that's like, you know, music to study to or music to sleep to or things like that. He makes music for that and does really, really well. It's surprising how much of that type of music people consume these days, you know, because they just kind of leave the playlist on all day. And then the next thing you know, you're an artist and you've got thousands of streams just from, you know, people leaving you on in the background.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, it's I think it's beneficial also somewhat in the workplace. I mean, if you got, I've said I'm a classical artist, but I came by way of folk music.
Mm.
And I've told people for years, I said, you know, we listen to different music for different reasons and different purposes.
You know, sure.
So, I mean, we get married, we get buried, we worship, we do
yep.
all of these things with music in the background, as well as going out and dancing and having fun and all that kind of stuff. And you just
sure.
don't always want the same kind of music for the same thing. If it's a Saturday night and you're ready to, you know, you don't want ambient music on at 9 o'clock on a Saturday night, unless you're ready to go to bed.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Like us old people. But at the same time, I think if I were in here working, I don't think that I would want anything, you know, really up, you know. Because I would find that distracting from my ability to do my work. So.
Yeah, I notice for me sometimes, especially when I'm, you know, drafting a contract and I'm in, you know, writing mode. Sometimes listening to music with vocals can be distracting for me because, you know, I start hearing the lyrics and they get in my head and then I'm not focused on the words that I'm writing, you know. So, you know, classical music or jazz or anything that's you know, instrumental, can be super beneficial for those times.
Right. I've had people tell me that they put my CDs on or they listen to me on YouTube, and they like to put it on just before they go to bed at night. And they say, gee, and they're afraid that they're going to somehow offend me by saying that. And I said, no, I don't. It's all good. You know, as long as you're hitting play, I'm happy.
Exactly. Get those streams up, you know.
But it is indeed. I know that it's just a way for people to unwind. And yeah. I've had people tell me that older people particularly tell me that they have my recordings and they would have them in the car. And that's what they would plug in when they left work. They said, it helps keep the road rage down.
Yeah. Hey, that's important.
Whatever works, you know.
Yeah.
Again, as long as they're hitting play, I'm happy.
That's great.
So anyway, the EDM scene is something I'm not terribly familiar with. And the gaming scene, writing music for video games, is something I'm a little bit more familiar with, and I'm not a gamer at all by any stretch, but my students, because I've taught for years, my students, the kids play games. Mm. And for many of them, that's the number one way that they consume music.
Yeah.
You know?
No, it's a big thing, especially with these like virtual worlds like Fortnite and Roblox and Minecraft and things where, you know, artists are having concerts in the games and performing in the game. And, you know, I think that's kind of a pretty revolutionary thing for the industry because, we got to, you know, I feel like finding younger listeners is a tough thing to do in this day and age. So if you can do that through games, you know, and get young kids interested in music. I mean, I was, you know, I play Fortnite with my niece and nephew and, you know, they're jamming out to Metallica and stuff like that, you know, because that's what's in the game. And they, you know, they know these songs now because they're in the game. And that's, I think that's a great thing. And definitely keeps me busy too, because I, like I said, do a lot of sync licensing. So, you know, for people listening, if you don't know, sync licensing is where, you know, you're literally syncing up the music with video, with visual images. So, you know, if you have a song in a TV show or a movie or a commercial, that's all sync licensing. So, you know, I do a lot of those deals and, you know, have done deals for video games where, you know, they first off, they actually pay really well because video games make a lot of money. So that's great for the artists because, you know, they can get, you know, some good cash from getting in a video game. But the exposure is what's really fantastic. And I, you know, it's just great to see, you know, songs have a second life because now they're, you know, played in this movie or they're played in this video game and, you know, people are discovering it and they're hitting Shazam and finding out what this song is. And now you got a new fan because somebody, you know, discovered you through a medium that they weren't expecting to discover music, you know?
It's, I know I talk to musicians my age, people that I've known since the dawn of time. And when I talk to them about music and video games in a way that's the way a lot of kids consume music, including original music. I've had kids come to me and want to play guitar versions of this song or that song from one of their favorite games. And the old timers just look at me, you know, all glassy eyed and then they get a little cranky about video games, you know, and I said, geez, dude.
Yeah.
It's the 21st century and we're a quarter of the way through. Get with the program a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
But so I guess leading up to my next question, which would be, are the laws keeping up with the technology? Because technology is moving along pretty quick.
Yeah, that's a great question. In many ways, no, the law is not keeping up with it. I think technology moves a lot faster than statutes can. I think there's definitely going to be a kind of a reckoning happening in the next few years with artificial intelligence in particular, and AI, just because, you know, now, you know, there's programs that'll develop AI music and, you know, you can create songs specifically through artificial intelligence, and there's not a lot of legal precedent for what that means in terms of ownership of the songs and songwriting and you know, publishing credits, because, you know, the AI sources that, you know, the way AI works is they're sourcing all these different sounds from various, you know, various other songs. So it's like, who is the original composer? Is it the, you know, do you give credit to the AI platform? Is it, you know, Microsoft gets credit, or is it the original sources, or is it the artist that used the AI tool? You know, there's going to be a lot, there's a lot of questions about that right now in the legal space. And, you know, people are kind of just sort of figuring out the answers as they go. And, you know, it's kind of the Wild West in that sense.
Yeah, because AI is the big, that's the big question mark everywhere.
It is.
And so I guess I didn't fully understand how AI created a lot of that stuff. But again, yeah. if I utilize AI to help me in something, then do I credit AI, or do I lie and take the credit myself?
That's exactly what I'm saying. Like, where does the ownership come from? You know, who is, you know, and then how different is it from using a plugin or a special kind of software or something to create something? Who owns the AI? Who owns the rights to the music? And, you know, especially when, you know, AI can be used to sort of spoof other voices. So if you have, you know, an AI that sounds like Paul McCartney, you know, is it Paul McCartney? Is it the AI? Is it who is it? You know,
they did that in Nashville recently with the song for Randy Travis, and he can't sing anymore, and so they got another singer who sings sort of like him, and then they plugged it in through AI, and with his blessing, he was in the studio when they did it, and so it went out as a Randy Travis song, even though he never sang on it.
That's
incredible. But it also went out. Honestly, they did a big press release and did a video on how they did it and all that kind of stuff. So there was total transparency there. So when you're listening to it, you'll understand what's going on. So you can be in awe of him and also in awe of the technology and the people operating it.
And the Beatles did a similar thing, and that song, got nominated for a Grammy now. So, you know. Do you give the Grammy Award to the AI software, or do you give it to the Beatles? You know,
but I don't think in that particular case, I think they used AI to separate and to enhance. I don't think they did it for creative purposes.
I think they used some AI for like maybe some singing from like John and George.
Possibly, yeah.
But yeah, it was. I know that they use it to enhance like earlier recordings, so maybe that's a little bit different. But. You know, still just a very interesting use of technology.
Everything is changing. It's really hard to keep up. And I just noticed, I read online yesterday or today that an AI painting just sold for like in the hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Wow. Well,
really?
I wouldn't spend my money on that, but it's, you know, if it's art to somebody, it's art.
Yeah, you know? I guess so. Yeah. I guess so. That's bizarre to me. That's bizarre to me. So, excuse me. So I guess the other thing I would ask about is you have a management company called Cigar City Management. Is that separate from your law practice, or is it just kind of all together?
No, it is separate from my law practice. So that was my company that I had before I started the law firm, and I still manage a couple bands, but you know, I'm not their lawyer. Like, I'm just their manager, and then they have their own lawyers. I don't double dip or anything like that. But for the most part, most of my time is spent on the law firm these days. There's just a couple bands that I love that I didn't want to lose from the management roster, you know?
Right. So how does, I know your law license is, I'm assuming, just Florida. So there's some work that you can and some work that you cannot do going across state lines.
That's correct. Most of the music work though, is federal law. I mean, you know, copyrights, trademarks, you know, intellectual property laws, that's all federal. So, you know, it doesn't really matter too much what state you're in, but sometimes when it does come to state specific issues, I am only barred in Florida, so I have to be pretty upfront and clear about that with my clients.
So, I mean, in some aspects then, like if I wanted to hire you for something, I could do that as a manager, but I couldn't ask you to represent me as an attorney because I'm in Michigan.
No, I could represent you. It just depends on the situation, you know. Because I do represent a lot of artists from all over the country and even international artists who are, you know, making their way into the U.S. for the first time. I represent as well.
So I shows you what I know, which is nothing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the world is just changing, and the music industry is changing so much. Like, you know, it used to be where if you wanted to be an entertainment attorney, you had to move to L.A. or you had to move to New York. But now, you know, there's a lot of attorneys from you know, small cities. And, you know, I was just on the phone yesterday with an attorney from North Carolina. He was representing an artist in L.A. I was representing an artist from New York. So, you know, and neither of us are in those states. So it's, you know, but a lot of clients come to us because we're not charging the same rates as the L.A. and the New York guys. And, you know, and then there's this whole scene of musicians that aren't in those cities, you know, people from, you know, Tampa, Florida, or Little Rock, Arkansas, or what, you know, whatever the city might be, where, you know, they still need representation, but, you know, there might not be an attorney that specializes in the music field in their close region. So they seek me out or other attorneys from around the country.
So I know that when you're in some of those cities like Nashville, New York, LA, et cetera, mm-hmm. A lot of times it's having connections. It helps in your particular case as representing artists, because it's also who you know, who you can pick up the phone and get through to and such.
Sure.
Are we past some of that when we're geographically distant now? Is that not a problem?
Yeah. I mean, it always helps to be able to meet people face to face. So obviously I travel a lot to those cities throughout the year and, you know, build relationships with people in person. But at the same time, you know, we're connecting now, you know, via Zoom. I think a lot of people, you know, do the same and, you know, through the internet, through social media, through these various platforms, it's a lot easier to meet people virtually and get to know them and build relationships that way. So, I haven't felt like I've been hindered by being in Florida, you know, and I think it's to my benefit because, the cost of living in Florida is rising rapidly, but it's, you know, it's still a lot cheaper to live here than it is to live in LA or New York. And, you know, for me to just fly there when I need to.
Well, I was talking to a friend of mine who's, far better traveled than I, and I was commenting to him the other day that I feel a little foolish at times and a little bit like a pretender because I'm sitting in a small town in central Michigan and I'm trying to conquer the world. but he said, you know, he said, you'd be sitting in Manhattan, you'd be doing the same thing. He says, nothing's
exactly.
changed. You know, geography doesn't matter when you get on the internet. It's just all the same stuff.
Yes.
So it just made the world go a lot smaller. It's made a program like this possible, which it just never would have been.
And it really is the whole world too. Like the globalization of music is a big topic right now, where, you know, some of the most popular songs are from artists from Colombia or, you know, the UK or wherever. Like, it, you know, I think geography isn't a limit the way it used to be.
Yeah, one of my guests recently, a couple of weeks ago, was we recorded the Zoom. We did Skype versus Zoom because Zoom didn't work there. From her home in Uzbekistan.
And oh, wow.
Yeah. So, but I've done that. I've done Germany a couple of times. It's pretty cool. So what kind of challenges have you found working with creative people versus other folks?
That's a big question. I think, you know, with creatives, I think there's, you know, there's two parts of the brain, right? So there's, you know, the type A or type B or whatever you want to call it. So, you know, a lot of creative people are geniuses in their own right and creative, you know, geniuses, but they, you know, they don't have, some of the, I don't know if it's the organizational skills or, you know, they don't do the business as well as they do the creative side. And that, I think that's, it's hard. It's really hard to do both and takes a very special kind of person. So, you know, I meet with a lot of artists who, you know, like I said, while they're very creative, they just don't know the business and they don't, you know, they struggle with, even registering their songs, you know, with their performing rights organization or copywriting their music or, you know, these things that seem like common sense to a lawyer like myself, but it can be very daunting when you're focused on making music and creating art. And then all of a sudden you have to do all these registrations, then you have to do all this business stuff and worry about licensing and worry about, you know, copyrights and all this stuff. So that's kind of where I come in, you know, but in terms of challenges, sometimes it can be hard to, you know, a lot of what I have to do is educate, you know, and teach people, you know, as I'm working with them, like, hey, you know, you're leaving money on the table by not registering your works with a performing rights organization, or, you know, you're giving up substantial royalties to a record label in exchange for very little production, you know, and having to kind of explain those things in contracts and explain clauses is a big challenge. It's very different from, you know, if you get injured in a car accident and you go to an injury lawyer, you kind of know what they're supposed to do and what their, you know, what the end goal is. But with music, it can be a lot more mysterious to people that haven't been part of the process before.
Well, speaking as a musician, I tell you that I spent the vast majority of my time alone practicing.
Yeah.
See, you just don't know what's going on in the world, you know.
Sure.
And somebody starts explaining it to you and your eyes glaze over and you start thinking about the next chord change. So.
Yeah, that's true. Well, and the other thing too is like a lot of musicians, like, you know, a lot of people make music for themselves. You know, they're not making it to be, you know, Taylor Swift or make a ton of money, you know, but it's still important to follow the proper legal channels, because A, you just never know, you know, a song might pick up and, you know, become a big hit, or, you know, just in general, you just want to protect your rights, because I mean, that you created something, you know, so you want your intellectual property rights to be protected, you know, in case anybody, you know, tries to steal what you're doing, or, and, you know, just having that peace of mind and being able to, rest assured that your music is protected, I think is super valuable.
Well, thank you. And thank you for all of the information. I hope the people that are listening to this will get something out of it. I know I certainly have. And believe it or not, Randy, we are out of time.
Oh, wow. That just flew right by.
It does, doesn't it? It just freaks me out when that happens. So I'm going to go ahead and hit the off button. We'll say goodbye. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Roger.
I really want to thank Randy for taking the time to chat with me. I hope you found it as helpful as I did. If you would like to know more about him, there is a link to his website in the description below. There's also a link to my website where you can find a bunch of guitar-related stuff. Much of it is free, as well as my blog that is an extension of the podcast. And please subscribe. I promise no spam. And thank you again for taking the time to listen. I really appreciate you a lot, and I hope you'll be back real soon to Creative Conversations with Roger Humphrey.